blast from the past to start the hour. Strawberry Switchblade since yesterday. Remember them?
I certainly do, yeah.
And Tracey Ullman there with They Don't Know. 30 minutes past eight. Further to our discussion about mosquitoes yesterday, here's a very informative email from Susan. I was down in the garden yesterday waging war against the Jouin Lepin ant population, and I noticed a couple of tiger mosquitoes alighting on my legs. They're everywhere, even during daylight hours. So Susan says, geraniums. We have mentioned this before, and some people swear by dabbing a bit of geranium oil on their wrists and ankles to keep the mosquitoes away.
Okay.
But it doesn't always work. But Susan says there is one particular geranium that the mosquitoes absolutely hate. It's called roseate geranium. It's rather a ferny type geranium with small pale pink flowers. Grows easily and prolifically, almost like a weed, and doesn't require much water or attention. And it doesn't look like the usual geranium. See, I watched a feature about geraniums in Gardener's World last week. It's very interesting. There's lots of geraniums you wouldn't even think were geraniums.
Okay, it's not just the classic geranium.
So if you go to your garden centre and ask for roseate geranium, hopefully they will know what that is. Mosquitoes do not like it and usually stay away. I have three of them on my terrace and rarely have any bother from mosquitoes. The plants were introduced on the Riviera for the perfume industry. They're a cheaper method of obtaining rose-smelling essence rather than using tons of roses. Absolute of rose is very labour-intensive and very expensive to produce. If you crush the leaves on the roseate geranium in your hands, a rose perfume is emitted. There are lots of the plants in the flower boxes outside the Monte Carlo Hotel School.
Oh, OK. Is there not one geranium that gives off that, citronella?
Well, there's quite a few of them, yeah. There's a sort of an orangey one and a lemony one, yeah. It's sort of
I thought it was citronella
geraniums.
Oil that you can use anyway, can't you?
It's not citronella, it's kind of citrus more than citronella.
OK.
Slightly different, but they are very nice, those geraniums.
Does it smell like citronella, then? Is that what repels
the... No, it smells like citrus.
Oh, OK.
Yeah.
OK.
It doesn't smell like citronella, that's something a bit different.
Oh,
but
right.
Mosquitoes generally don't like citronella either.
Right, okay, so both would work.
Mm. Quarter past eight.
And now it's time for Woofer of the Week on 106.5 Riviera Radio.
Dawn Howard is here with Woofer of the Week. Hello, Dawn.
Hello there.
Just waiting for summer to start, really.
I know, but equally, when it isn't raining, it's quite a nice temperature, so
yes,
make the most.
It is nice, but I suppose we'll all be complaining it's too hot soon, so we should...
Absolutely.
All right, well, of course, dogs don't like hot weather very much, but what have we got this week?
This week, we've got a lovely young dog. Naya is her name, and she's just had her second birthday, so she's a young dog. She's black and white. She's a Staffy Cross, and that means that she's stocky, but she's a small to medium-sized dog. She's got lots of energy, like any young dog would have, and also the breed. And so it would be great if she could have a garden, please. And also people who are happy to keep her busy with training, games and walks. She doesn't like cats, so a household with no cats. She's chipped, she's sterilised and vaccinated, so she's all ready to go. And if you like the sound of her, you can find out more. She's at the Refuge Jean Duflo in Antibes and they are open every day from 2 to 5.
You haven't been very good with names for me recently to get my teeth stuck into.
I know, this is a tough one, isn't it?
Maya, I'll come up with something. Could have John Meyer, I suppose, although it's Mayer, really, but...
It's N, Naya, it's an N.
Oh, N, Naya.
Yeah.
Oh, right, well,
even harder.
Well, let me have a think about it. OK, Dawn, thank you. Speak to you next week.
That was Woofer of the Week. For more details about this week's Woofer, go to the 106.5 Riviera Radio page on Facebook or our website at rivieraradio.mc. Woofer of the Week on 106.5 Woof Viera Radio.
Time for this morning's comedy, and with all these sporting actions starting again, I think we'd better hear from Ron Manager talking, oddly enough, about cricket.
Half-time, no goals. Not exactly an inspiring match, Tommy.
It was so slow there. I mean, I thought sometimes I was looking at a cricket match.
Oh, cricket.
Slightly sinister, you know. Too quiet, isn't it? Too much maths. Pakistan 328 for 6. Australia 542 for 7 declared. England 4 for a pound. Strawberries! Ripe strawberries shan't be round tomorrow!
Yes, thank you, Ron.
Thank you.
Well, disappointing first half, but it wasn't all doom and gloom. I thought Stan Collymore looked particularly good.
Oh, you know, the strong, powerful physique, yet graceful like a big cat.
The hooded eyes, that shy smile.
He's gorgeous, isn't he?
Gorgeous.
Oh, but, you know, they're all gorgeous, aren't they? Stan Collymore, David James, Sharka Hislop, David Ginola, Ian Walker. Oh, gorgeous.
They certainly are, Ron. And what about young Jamie Redknapp?
Oh! You know, the floppy hair, the little boyish smile. Enduring image, isn't it, you know? Not like his father, old saggy face. You know, those old players, they're like characters from the Beano, isn't it? Aren't they? Nobby Styles, Chopper Harris, Jackie Charlton. They're all Uggs, aren't they?
Ah, but George Best.
Now, he was gorgeous.
Well, he's lost it now, haven't we all?
Cry from small boys in the park, isn't it? Expensive replica away kits for goalposts. In beige and orange. Oh, Patrick Berger, though. Oh, you know, new hero, isn't it? Those cheekbones, finely chiselled. Oh, that long mane of beautiful chestnut hair. I bet he'd like a bit of zig-a-zig pie.
So now we know why you support Liverpool. Because they're all, is it? Hey.
Of course, of course. Today's quiz, question number one. On this day in 1885, the dismantled Statue of Liberty, a gift of friendship from the people of France to the people of America, arrived in New York Harbour after being shipped across the Atlantic Ocean in 350 individual pieces packed in more than 200 cases.
You've been up it?
No. My question is, who released the single Statue of Liberty? In 1978, it was recorded at Abbey Road Studios,
XTC.
London. Yeah, and why was it banned from the BBC?
Why was it banned from the BBC?
By the BBC, yeah. It was performed on the Old Grey Whistle Test in 1978.
Great record, that is.
But it was banned.
Why was it banned? Something to do with the lyrics, obviously.
Yeah.
It's many years since I climbed your torso. Is that something to do with it?
It was... In my fantasy, I sail beneath your skirt.
Right, oh, good. How disgusting, honestly.
Question number two.
Upskirting the Statue of Liberty.
On this day in 1972, who released the song with the following lyrics? I'll be your clown or your puppet or your April Fool. If you'll be my sunshine daisy from LA, I'll be your leprechaun and sit upon an old toadstool.
Little Jimmy Osmond, is it?
It certainly is, with...
I'll be your long-haired lover from Liverpool.
I bet you're not proud of...
God damn. No, well, I mean, could get away from him when I, in the early 70s. Yeah. And little Jimmy Osmond.
And you know the lyrics Osmond's off
fan.
By heart.
No, I don't.
But you obviously do.
It was all over the place, wasn't it? Number one, I think it was.
No, it peaked. Well, it says peaked at 38. That must be in the US.
Must have been higher than that. I'm sure it was a UK number one.
Yeah. On this day, finally, on this day in 1973, this female American country singer released which song, which was later to become a hit for Whitney Houston?
Dolly Parton.
Yeah, and the song was.
Don't know.
I Will Always Love You.
Oh, really?
Yes. You have got the Dolly Parton one in there if you want it. Or you can play the Whitney Houston one that you're obviously very familiar with.
No, I just knew it was Dolly Parton. It was either her or Emma Lou Harris or some, wasn't it? Okay, should we have the Dolly Parton version?
Yeah.
God, hope Hank's listening. You'll love it.
Riviera Radio. Business.
Morning.
Good morning.
You need to get out more, I think.
I would like to get out a little bit more, but we're still in lockdown, so you've got to be very careful.
You are allowed outs, though. You could go to the shops if you want.
Yes, I think so, but I'm not at that stage just yet. No real purchases required by Mr. Potts or the Potts family household at this stage that requires an urgent visit to the retail environment.
You don't think you should pay a visit to Potts Towers?
People tell me it's all doing fine in London.
You might have Scossers have moved in by now.
I hope not, but never mind.
Yeah. You got one of those ring doorbells?
No, I haven't, to be honest with you.
Okay.
People take those, apparently, so you've got to be very careful.
Take them?
Well, people come along, sort of unscrew them, and off they go with them.
Why don't you just drill them into the wall?
I don't know. I think you have them in the door, don't you? I don't know. You know, this is not a technology I've really focused on dramatically.
Okay, markets continued to rally yesterday. Consumer spending up in the US, but it's not sustainable, is it?
Well, I think policymakers continue to ride to the aid of nervous investors. It feels like any sign of anxious sentiment is very quickly quashed by yet another round of buying from central banks or pledges of fiscal stimulus coming through from governments. Markets reacted to that, powering ahead on hopes that such moves, particularly from the United States, will be enough to offset the biggest shock to the global economy since World War II. They're also reacting to the data releases, particularly those positive retail sales numbers from the United States. But eventually, I think investors will look back at the fundamentals. They'll understand that it's being artificially boosted by central banks, and this can last a long time and can be significant, of course, but eventually it does come down to valuations and it comes down to earnings visibility, both of which perhaps a little bit more debatable at this stage. So I think investors need to be a little bit cautious and they need to have hedging strategies in place to try and reduce the risk of a significant sell-off from these levels. S&P 500 rose yesterday for a third day. It was up 1.9%. It was led by technology and healthcare. And we're looking at a positive start on the European bourses this morning. FTSE up 15 points. DAX over in Frankfurt up 9 points. CAC in Paris up 5 points. Although the path of the pandemic continues to be worrying, investors will also be watching the medical data quite closely, particularly coming through from Beijing, where you've seen an outbreak in a food market that supplies 80% of the city. I think we're seeing a big increase in infection rates in Florida. So there's a number of areas that are potential hotspots that have the potential to filter through to market sentiment.
Yes, and the pandemic is far from over in the United States as well. I mean, we had figures out yesterday saying that an extra 740 new deaths reported in 24 hours and total COVID-19 deaths in the US now 116,854.
Yeah, they are significant numbers. The US economy, of course, is easing those restrictions and is coming back to life, and that's a positive. The question is, do they pay a price for that in terms of the medical impact? And if that number really starts to rise, starts the infection numbers pick up, I think they have in 20 US cities, that could force leaders there to rethink the speed of the easing of those restrictions, and that of course would have an impact in terms of the economy.
And the big question is, how do we reset society after this pandemic? I mean, we've had lockdown finished for a month now in France, and already the roads are filling up. I mean, it's not as bad as it was before, but quite a few traffic jams around on the motorway this morning. And consumer spending up 17.7% in May in the UK. We saw the queues outside the stores in the US. We saw the queues outside the stores in the UK when they open again on Monday. I'm constantly surprised about people going out and buying stuff they don't really need.
Yeah, there was this idea that actually we've all sort of changed during the course of the lockdown, and that we're no longer going to be this sort of spending society where it's about material goods and it's about something perhaps more important than that and more family orientated and experiences and spending time with loved ones. As soon as the shops are reopened, that's all gone out the window and people are flocking back to the stores once again, it would appear, which is obviously good news for the economy, I suppose, particularly for developed economies where it's a significant component of growth. United States, of course, being top of that list, had retail sales numbers yesterday that showed that they increased by the most on record in May after two straight months of sharp declines. Businesses reopening, adding to the evidence the world's largest economy can indeed emerge from the recession with the help of household consumption. Though the record jump in retail sales recouped only a fraction of the March and April decreases, leaving consumer spending and the economy on track for the biggest contraction in the second quarter since the Great Depression. Even with May's sales surge, is still 8% below the February level. Retail sales, you say, up 17.7%, which is the biggest advance since the government started tracking the series in 1992. Americans used the easing of restrictions to buy cars up 44%. Sales of electronics and appliance stores soared 50%. Receipts at clothing stores rebounded 188% during the course of last month. That's, of course, from a very low base. But I think the strong retail sales number, May's resilient employment report, improving manufacturing activity, all adds to the evidence of a steady bounce back for the US economy. So a big contraction in the second quarter, maybe as much as 40%. Then growth starting to shine through. We expect growth of just above 27% as you look for through the third quarter.
Then the other side of that coin is, okay, great to see retail sales rising to get economies going again, but it results in an increase in carbon emissions and the use of plastics.
Yeah, it's true. There's the other hope, of course, of the structural change coming through from the COVID-19 element for society is that there will be a greater focus and an acceleration towards the green agenda. We've certainly seen some aggressive moves coming through in Europe, and we saw the benefits of the lockdown in terms of the environment, but very quickly as the world starts to emerge from that, the reduced investment by certain companies may actually push back that agenda from a long-term perspective, and that's something I think many governments are cognizant of and will look to try to move some of that stimulus power to try and drive that agenda over the course of the next few years.
And you can tell there's an election around the corner in the United States when President Trump starts to speak about infrastructure spending.
Yeah, I think you're right, actually. Trump administration is preparing a $1 trillion infrastructure proposal as part of a push to spur the world's largest economy out of the recession. Money would be used for some traditional projects, including roads and bridges and railways, etc. But the funds would also be set aside for 5G wireless infrastructure and rural broadband. The draft plan is emerging as US lawmakers debate the timing and the scope of more stimulus. President Trump, as you say, seen as wanting to boost the US economy, which may be absolutely crucial in his re-election chances.
Yeah, but so he's left a bit late, hasn't he? I mean, the chance of that getting through Congress before the election, I would say, pretty much zero.
Yeah, well, there are both sides of the aisle are actually talking about the potential to develop a joint plan. There is some debate, as I say, perhaps from the Democrats, exactly how that money should be funneled in areas in which they should be focusing on. And, of course, the timing of that will be important because, as I say, the economy is incredibly important when it comes to the election, particularly, of course, in areas that Donald Trump won last time that will be absolutely vital for him next time around. The Electoral College is important. Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, these are states that Trump won last time, put them in the Republican column for the first time in 25 years, and he knows he'll need to win them if he's to secure a second term.
Well, it's coming up fast, isn't it? 5 months until the election.
Four months, I think, isn't it?
Is it four and a half months? Are you making any predictions yet about the results? Seeing what the most likely outcome is? The polls seem to suggest Biden's got quite a big lead at the moment.
Yeah, I was just about to say the polls have got, and particularly in some of those key states, that will be incredibly important. And remember, Biden is from Pennsylvania as well, so perhaps if Donald Trump needs to win that, then he's against a tougher opponent than Hillary Clinton in some of those areas. The America First message really shone through in some of those key states. Be interesting whether he can achieve that same level, but the economy I think will be incredibly important for him. We know that most presidents that seek re-election are able to do so. Those since 1900, those who haven't been able to achieve that has been against a difficult economic backdrop. A couple of months ago, of course, it looked in good shape. We had multi-decade low unemployment in the United States. We had rising wages. We had stock markets up at record levels. That was going to be the cornerstone, one would suspect, of President Trump's re-election campaign. Now he must perhaps rethink that, try to get the economy going, or change tack to push being tough on China as perhaps the way to be re-elected. So it's going to be, I think, somewhat of a fascinating campaign. The polls have certainly suggested that former Vice President Joe Biden is the front runner on the back of this, but those who write off President Trump often do so at their peril.
Well, it's going to be very interesting to see who Biden chooses as his running mates, because he's more likely to vote for somebody who represents the Black Lives Matter movement, isn't he?
Yeah, that's a potential area that he'll be looking to focus on. Lots of speculation that he could choose a woman to run alongside him on the ticket. And again, it's all about understanding the way in which his policy is likely to evolve. He's likely to be more focused on big policy areas. Foreign affairs is one area we know that he's particularly interested in, but climate change and shared values, I think, are other areas that potentially Joe Biden will look to focus on if he does indeed become president.
Move over Adam Bolton. Goodness me. Thank you.
I know. Mm. Well, to be honest, I wrote a whole argument around this yesterday, so I was slightly more informed on it than I normally am.
Oh, good. OK, foreign exchanges, please.
I will send it over to you. Pound against the dollar coming in at 125.5. Euro dollar coming in at 112.5. Going to get €1.11 for your British pound this morning.
Thank you very much. Talk to you tomorrow.
Have a good day.
Hank Paulson, Barclays.
On FM and DAB Plus across the Côte d'Azur, on your phone and worldwide online, this is Riviera Radio with the latest local news for the south of France.
Sarah Lyson has the top stories across the Riviera.
A new weekly report published by the Regional Health Agency on Tuesday has shown that the number of people admitted to hospital in the Provence-Alpes-Côte d'Azur region due to COVID-19 has seen a slight increase. After several days of no change in the number of admissions and even a drop in the Outmarrow team in the VAR, the number of patients in the Outmarrow team now stands at 89 and 109 in the VAR. The death toll from COVID-19 remains stable, having not changed in the Outmarrow team since June the 4th and has remained the same since June the 9th in the VAR region. In order to use the information correctly, authorities will wait for next week's data in order to compare. In the past, it's been pointed out that there was often an increase in cases following a weekend where numbers were grouped together, and secondly, that the data is now on a weekly and not a daily basis. Hundreds of medical staff have demonstrated across France to express their anger over a lack of government support. After 3 months of dealing with a major health crisis due to COVID-19, nurses, doctors and other health professionals are at breaking point. At least 220 rallies took place throughout the day on Tuesday, many of them outside hospitals and clinics. Some medical services went on strike. In Paris, protests were overshadowed by the infiltration of black blocs, which led to clashes with police. Police used tear gas to break up the crowd and arrested 16 people. Meanwhile, a French parliamentary commission of inquiry into the coronavirus crisis intended to identify failures on the part of the French authorities has opened at the National Assembly. France's Director General of Health, Jerome Solomon, appeared first before the National Assembly on Tuesday, defending himself by citing Voltaire, saying, "Avant de savoir, on ne sait pas," before knowing, we don't know. Solomon went on to be questioned about possible regrets following his remarks concerning the importance of wearing a mask on March the 4th, which he said was of no interest for the general public. In response to the inquiry and speaking to French media on Tuesday, MP Eric Ciotti said that the French government's campaign had come to an end and it was now time for the truth, before adding that the inquiry is not seeking to prosecute anyone, but rather to identify the faults, flaws and major dysfunctions in the handling of the crisis to ensure that they are not repeated. Police officers have gathered on the Quai Rouail-Capoue in front of the I Love Nice sign in Nice to protest against the lack of support from France's Minister of the Interior, Christophe Castaner. Tuesday evening saw the National Union for Police demand a meeting with the President of the Republic. Meteo France has issued a yellow weather alert with thunderstorms forecast in the Outmarrow team this afternoon. The warning is in place until 9 p.m. this evening. Figures published today have shown that the number of job offers in France is gradually improving, with as many jobs posted on the internet now as there were at the beginning of the year, particularly in the IT and telecommunications sector. There's also demand in the transport sector, with the aeronautics industry being the worst hit. Offers of permanent employment, contracts in France, or CDIs, are down by 18% in mid-June compared to the beginning of the year, marking an improvement since the lockdown and showing a somewhat shy but slow economic recovery. Finally, French actor and voiceover artist Patrick Poivet has died at the age of 72. Poivet was a cult voice in French cinema, lending it to many American actors, notably Bruce Willis as well as Tom Cruise, whom he dubbed in 10 feature films, including Top Gun and Rain Man. He also provided voices for Mickey Rourke, Kevin Costner, Don Johnson and Charlie Sheen.
Riviera Radio, sports news.
All the hard men then, basically.
Yeah, I recognise his voice. Do you recognise his voice?
No, because I can't stand watching dad films.
Oh, right.
Yeah. I won't watch them under any circumstances. Football Bayern Munich have won their 8th successive Bundesliga title thanks to a 1-0 away win at Werder Bremen, with Robert Lewandowski scoring the winner on 43 minutes. The win puts Bayern 10 points clear of Borussia Dortmund, which means they can't be caught with 3 games to go. The English Premier League returns to action behind closed doors tonight, with 2 games outstanding from the previous round that couldn't be completed in March. Aston Villa play Sheffield United at 7 p.m. and Manchester City host Arsenal at 9:15. So predictions, Aston Villa against Sheffield United.
Well, I'm going to go for Aston Villa because Prince William supports Aston Villa. And I can't go for Sheffield United because John has a lot to do with Sheffield Wednesday and he won't speak to me again because they don't speak to each other. So I'm going for Aston Villa.
Well, normally Sheffield United should romp that on past form, but I'm going to stick my neck out and go for Villa as well, desperate for points. Manchester City against Arsenal.
I'm going to go for Man City.
Absolutely. Here's more from BBC Sports.
BBC Premier League update from the home of Premier League football.
Hello, I'm Paul Serres at the BBC Sports Centre. As the countdown to the resumption of the Premier League continues, the Manchester City manager Pep Guardiola says injuries are inevitable. City, who play Arsenal on Wednesday, face 10 matches in the Premier League and further games in the FA Cup and the Champions League.
So I think we are ready to play one game, but 3 days after another one and 4 days after another one, we are not ready. Not, I think, Man City and all teams, but that's why you have to rotate and use absolutely all the players. So you can play a game after 3 weeks on holidays, but we were 2 weeks in holidays, lying in the sofa, nothing much. And that's why I think the players are not fully fit. But we have to start, we have to finish the season, because the damage economically for all the clubs can be reduced as less as possible.
A day before the Premier League restarts, Marcus Rashford has already had arguably the biggest win of his career.
Proud of a young man is to stand and to speak out and try to actually use his influence in the right way.
Louis Saha praising the England and Manchester United forward for his campaign, which has forced the British government to continue to provide free school meals for children in need during the forthcoming summer holidays in England. Rashford says, "I stand proud today, knowing that we have listened and we have done what is right. The well-being of our children should always be a priority." Former United striker Saha has been speaking to the BBC.
It's really very courageous from him, because there is like a lot of people who just try to be hiding and try to protect their career. This is really a good example what Rashford has done. You know, it's not about party, it's about helping and getting a result. And I think by being together, it's enormous things could be done.
And for more football news from the BBC, go to bbc.com/football.
BBC Premier League update from the home of Premier League football.
It should be Sir Marcus Rashford now, shouldn't it?
Yes.
Mm. And Pep Guardiola, injuries are inevitable. How did you work that out? Cricket, the men's T20 World Cup, is unlikely to take place this year, according to Cricket Australia. The tournament is due to take place across 7 venues between the 18th of October and the 15th of November. But Cricket Australia says that trying to get 16 teams into the country, where many nations are still suffering with spikes in coronavirus, is unrealistic. Tennis, the US Open, can go ahead on the 31st of August, but without fans, after getting the green light from the Governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo. There have been no professional tennis events since March because of the coronavirus pandemic. Some players have expressed reservations about the tournament and the fact they'll be limited to one member of their coaching team being allowed to accompany them to the stadium. And in racing, Battash, with Jim Crowley on board, won the big race on the opening day of Royal Ascot. The odds-on favourite cruised to victory in the King's Stand Stakes, giving trainer Charlie Hills a 1-2, with stablemate Equilateral second. Today's feature race is the Prince of Wales Stakes, which is off at 4 p.m. French time. Japan, Headman and Barney Roy are among the favourites for the Group 1 race over 1 mile and 2 furlongs.
The marine weather forecast brought to you by Oyster Yachts. Be safe on the seas with Oyster Yachts.
The coastal area is up to 20 miles offshore the Almere Sea and the Var. The general situation is a depression, 1,012 millibars, stationary over the Ligurian Sea. Winds are variable, force 2 to 4, becoming southwesterly, force 6 to 7, west of Gurup. The sea is slight, becoming moderate to rough, west of the Cap d'Antibes. Visibility is good. Barometric pressure at Saint-Jean-Cap Ferrat, 1,012 millibars. And the outlook for Thursday, clear skies, force 3 to 5, southwesterly winds, slight seas and good visibility. For North Corsica, winds are southwesterly, force 6 to 7. The sea is moderate to rough. Visibility is good. Barometric pressure at Cap Corse, 1,011 millibars. And the outlook for Thursday, partially cloudy, force 6 to 7. Southwesterly winds, moderate to rough seas and good visibility.
The Marine Weather Forecast brought to you by Oyster Yachts. Crafted by British boat builders since 1973, the best ocean-going sailing yachts in the world. The world is your oyster. Make Oyster your world. OysterYachts.com.
Riviera Radio. Weather.
Mainly fine coastal areas, some thundery showers inland again this afternoon. Moderate westerly winds across the Var with highs of 23 to 26 degrees today. Overnight lows 18 degrees on the coast, 15 degrees inland with clear skies. Thursday and Friday, fine in coastal areas. A few showers around inland again, highs of 23 to 26 degrees. Finally,
a cut above the rest, a boy aged 6 has launched a garden maintenance business and he vows to become a millionaire. He started his garden maintenance business during lockdown. Alfie Bradley, who has battled a severe speech disorder, set up Alfred's Cutting Services during lockdown. He already has three regular customers and several others have paid him for one-off work. Alfie, who has a uniform, he charges £10 a job with an NHS staff discount. The family say, we can't believe it. Alfie wouldn't sit still during lockdown and he's very determined to set up his business, even buying a new mower. There you go. You could do that.
Well, I could get him round to my place and do a bit of pruning. I'd sit there and give him instructions. Don't cut that bit off.